Kitty Green. Big flourish.
Ground control, it's Major Tom.
Thank you, Roger.
Wow.
Showing your age now, singing that song.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, sitting or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So how many people do we have who have never meditated before? Any newcomers? Okay. All right, so obviously the intention and your motivation for coming is all different. Always, they call it the Buddhist meditation group here. But if you go to a different Buddhist center or whatnot, they will teach you probably a different method of meditation than here. They do it differently. Everybody has their own style. There are many different methods of meditation. I have a meditation on the breath. Some people, they do colors, kasinas, or they do contemplation of the body, or contemplation of feelings, and so the method can be very different according to the tradition, but also to the temperament of the guy or the girl who is teaching you.
So I find that very helpful to figure that out in your own mind first. What is your motivation? Why do you want to meditate in the first place? What do you hope to get out of it?
Peace.
Peace, okay. There's one thing. Some other people might be sick. They want to cure their sickness with it. They hope to burn away their cancer cells or to alleviate some other pain. Some people might have anxiety. Want to use meditation to conquer their anxiety or to... some people might be dragged in by their wives or their spouses and they think, why the hell am I sitting here? So your motivation obviously is, there's not one theme going on. You have, I don't know, 40, 50 people, whatever, and you all have your own thing in mind, what you hope to get out of it. I can tell you what I have to offer from my practice, my experience. I hope for some of you that will be helpful. For others with a different temperament, it might be not so helpful. So that doesn't mean that you're going the wrong way and I'm going the right way or the other way around. We are at different points in our lives. Some people are older than me, some people are younger than me. We come from different backgrounds, Westerners, Asian, and I don't know what, Eastern European. So we have a different history, we have different perceptions, we have a different learning curve. So what I'm gonna offer you, what I find important, because you can never know is my method a good one or the right one if you don't know what meditation is about. And I say, if the meditation doesn't make you more peaceful, if it doesn't make you more happy, if it makes you more agitated, if it increases your anxiety or your pains, fears, then obviously it's not a good thing for you, the meditation. Meditation, practiced properly, should lead from the very beginning to more peace, more relaxation, more happiness. And this is something you don't always hear from your meditation teachers. Other people say you have to concentrate on your nose, focus on the breath, concentration, one-pointedness, bringing all together at one point in your body. And then people say, oh, well, I can't stop my thinking and my knees hurt and I don't know, and I feel uncomfortable and I feel restless and this and that. And so meditation becomes from the very beginning just another struggle in your life. And if that is the case, I don't see the point. I mean, what I at least found inspiring in the Buddhist teaching was it's beautiful in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. The whole idea was to have a past that is something tangible, something you can feel yourself in. It's not something you have to believe. There's not some dogma out there which tells you, oh, five precepts. If you don't keep the five precepts, basically, you're a bad person or whatnot, and you go to hell or whatever. It's basically what I just said. If you keep the five precepts, you create a mind that is beautiful and harmless, free of anxiety. Other people don't have to fear you. You don't have to fear other people. It's this thought of cause, always this cause and effect. And if you see the cause and effect of your meditation, how you treat your own mind, how your inner, first of all, to realize there's an inner monologue going on in your own mind the whole time. You know, always basically, now there's something going on in your mind already, some little comment. What is he talking about? So there's this inner monologue going on, and that inner monologue has a certain quality. It can be very harsh, can be very judgmental, or it can be a very kind monologue. Can be sort of just somebody who looks out for you and tries to point out, oh, that direction is leading to suffering. That direction is leading actually to more wholesome feelings. And I hope you develop your meditation from the very beginning, that this inner commentator, even if you can't stop that inner commentator, but the commentator is going to be somebody who is talking kindly, trying to point things out. And sometimes they can't shut up. The commentator is going to talk and talk and talk, but there is some influence over this. Create another problem out of that. Don't create another commentator who is basically scolding the other commentator for not shutting up. It's all the same stuff. It's all thoughts in the mind, nothing more. We just have this huge problem that we identify so very much with our own thoughts. My thoughts. If we had to speak out all the thoughts we're thinking, that would be embarrassing. We think so much crap every day, don't we? Or do you always think only wholesome good stuff? You look like, oh, what he is talking about. I'm so good. I only think kind stuff. Ah, come on. I know you guys. You all think a lot of crap as well. Especially the interesting thing is you tell your mind, okay, now be quiet, mind, and it doesn't shut up. So who's speaking? Who's thinking? So meditation, first of all, I hope meditation can create for you this little bit of distance in the mind. This little bit of, wow, there's a commentator there. But if that commentator is on a path to more happiness or on a path to more suffering, that still needs to be decided from moment to moment to moment. And there, hopefully, the meditation helps us to become more skillful. To see, oh wow, this is an agitated thought. This is an unkind thought. Feel it. How does it feel? I mean, just the thought of killing the non-believers. Killing the non-believers. Some people believe that. They really believe they're doing something worthwhile by killing people who don't believe the same stuff they believe. Just imagine that. Just the thought of that. What sort of mind state that is, how that feels in the body. If they would just shut up for a second, feel inside their body and let that thought spread through their body. I'm gonna kill the infidel. Just the agitation, the tension of it. Your body tells you already this is the wrong direction. This is an unkind direction. This is a direction of suffering. Negative thoughts about another person. Just feel inside your body. How does that thought feel? Am I on the path to more peacefulness with that thought? And then we don't have to have all these outside concepts of morality. This is the Christians say we should do that, and the Muslims say we should do that, and the Buddhists say we should do that. It's basically this sort of what is harmful for myself and other people feels not right. And then we get a very strong indicator actually of how we think and how we behave. We cannot always do it right immediately, but at least we get an idea of where we go wrong. And if the mind sees this is leading to more suffering, then we let go of it automatically. We don't need any other commentator in the background for that, who is scolding us. If the mind sees this is leading to more suffering, I guarantee you let go. It's only because we don't see that we cling on to stuff that is bad for us. Every time we realize this is leading to more pain, we don't need an extra one in the background to say, okay, no, we shouldn't do that anymore. There is no shouldn't. If the mind sees that it's suffering, it lets go, because that is the function of the mind. That is what the Buddha discovered. It's what's happening in every second right now. We're looking for happiness and trying to avoid suffering. Every action from coming here to the Amala group was because you tried to avoid suffering and get yourself a little more happiness. Breathing in, breathing out. Just avoiding the suffering of having enough air in your lungs feels uncomfortable. And the body does that automatically. Every movement we make is because we're living in this painful body. It has to be moved. Right? Try to keep it still for a while, and it just becomes incredibly uncomfortable. That's it. Right? Always have to feed it and wash it. Right? Otherwise, we become unbearable to others and ourselves. So, seeing that clearly in the mind, that is that function, trying to avoid suffering, trying to get happiness. It's the most natural function. But doing that on the backs of other beings, to create our own happiness, we are often very blind, and we don't see that we create suffering for others, but also for ourselves, with that sort of mind state. And the clearer we see that, the more careful we obviously become with the interactions we have with other beings. No? We see, now I tell them what to do, and I'm angry, and I'm very firm, and I'm not letting them do that with me. But you feel the agitation and what it leaves as a residue in your mind, you feel already, oh no, that wasn't a good direction. That is not clarifying anything. This is basically just pouring out my own suffering, and it's not eliminating it, it's basically just perpetuating that circle. So that I hope that you learned, the newcomers in your meditation, to be aware what is going on in your thought, in your thoughts, in that process, in this inner monologue. See if the monologue is kind or if it's unkind, and I encourage you to do that in the meditation we're doing here now. From the very beginning, that instead of trying to calm yourself and quiet, present moment, and just this, watch your attitude, watch the attitude in the mind. The goal obviously is we try to make it calmer, we try to be in the present moment, we're going to have our eyes closed, we can't close our ears, there will still be sounds. And then there will still be thoughts, and then we can sort a little bit from the thoughts that have nothing to do with what's going on here right now in that half an hour of our meditation. And we can say this is not important right now. We don't have to figure anything out. Don't have to think about anything in the future. Don't have to think about anything in the past. But this direction, please put your effort into keeping that direction kind. Because the mind is not going to just obey you and it's going to be quiet. So give your direction kindly, and then when the mind is wandering too far and you're into what you're doing next week already, then remind yourself. You don't have to work right now, mind. Just relax, just see what's going on here right now in my body and my mind. So we call that present moment awareness, and see how close we can get to that today. And if you're lucky and it gets a little bit more calm, you will be also reconnected to your body, and then you will feel this sort of this constant thinking. What a great burden that is. This constant figuring out and judging. And when that just stills a little bit, it's just like a burden is falling off the shoulders. And then meditation is going to become something attractive. It's going to become something beautiful. It doesn't become some exercise that you might one day become enlightened about. It's going to be something where you can see this is a path that is beautiful. It leads to calmness. And the calmness gives me perspective in my day-to-day life, how I react with others. And so clarity increases in your mind, and you can see unwholesome patterns more easily. And so it's far easier to dissolve all the stuff that is still unwholesome in our speech, actions, and thoughts. So I'm going to give a guided meditation. I'm going to talk for a few minutes to give you, especially the newcomers, a little bit more instructions. I hope you know the general idea now. It's going to be about the attitude of your mind. So try to keep it nice. If you don't manage, be nice about it. And we start the meditation. If somebody can check the lights, the trouble is I don't know if I can see my watch still because I forgot to bring my alarm clock.
You will see.
I hope I keep it more or less in the time frame of half an hour. If I go too far over on something, then somebody can cough or whatnot.
All of us.
Okay, so please, the first thing is to sit as comfortable as you can. But if you slouch down too much, you will feel uncomfortable after a few minutes in your back. So it needs to be on a chair, a little bit of straightness there. Your feet need to have the right distance away from your seat and the right distance from each other. If you're sitting on the ground, obviously you have your own instructions, you're probably used to that. Your hands, however your hands feel comfortable in your lap. For me it's always I have to have them relatively close to my stomach, otherwise I feel my shoulders slouching too much and then that creates tension in my neck after a while. And then the first thing for me is always I do a deep breath and I really pump myself up, see if the airflow is very there's no obstacle there. Sometimes you feel that maybe your belt is too tight or things like that. Your stomach has to be able to move a little bit and your chest has to be able to come out. And then when I exhale, I feel my shoulders slouching a little bit already. It's not slouching, relaxing. Okay? You can do that a few times until you have the feeling, yeah, that the body sits pretty much in a position now where it's as comfortable as it can get. Not gonna harm that body in half an hour now, sitting like that. Okay? If you have some chronic pain, these rules obviously don't apply to you. You might have to move a little bit, and that's just bad luck, that's the way it is with a stupid body. So, now we start from the feet upwards. Relax your toes. You can always use it with an in-breath and an out-breath. If you're not sure if it's relaxed, you can tighten them and then you relax them. Huh? And just be aware of your feet standing on the ground for a second. So if your legs feel still squeezed in a way, maybe you have to change the distance still from your two feet or your knees more apart or closer together. You can still make adjustments later, but it's just this general check up that we don't have to worry about the body for this half an hour. And also to make us a little bit more aware of the body, because the body tells us a lot in our meditation about our mind states, about our feelings, what thoughts create what feelings. So I usually just go up and into my chest area, have a few more breaths, see if my shoulders are relaxed. On my out breaths, I try to relax my shoulders. And then when if my breast flows freely and I have relaxed my shoulders, my neck comes automatically in a certain position where it's most comfortable. So it's just a position where it doesn't feel like your breath is obstructed. There's a little bit of room there to wobble. Usually it's there's not much movement necessary afterwards anymore for me. Now I just check my hands again. I'm not quite comfortable actually with my shoulders. Feels better. Now I check my face. I obviously can't check my mouth so much because I'm still talking. You can check if there's tension around your mouth. If you feel tension, give a smile and then relax the smile. I find that always very nice. And then there should be no effort in the mouth region, no effort in the eye region. The eyelids are just sit gently, we're not squinting. And then our forehead, that's where all the thoughts are happening up there, and I just can relax. Don't have to figure anything out. Just gotta try to stay what is happening here in this beautiful group right now. All these people coming together in peace with a relaxed body. During the meditation, maybe even the body relaxes further. Sometimes the shoulders relax again, or the neck relax. Maybe some quick movement there, and you feel, oh, there was tension there still before. And that is all allowed to go. The more comfortable the body is, the more sure we are that we're not going to damage it, better it is. The body is too uncomfortable, it's very hard for the mind to get peaceful. We don't expect our body to be completely comfortable, because it never is. It's just, if it's not hurting too much, that's great. If I don't have to hold on to anything right now, great. Like lying down in your most comfortable position in bed. Everything should be relaxed. And if it's not relaxed now, it might happen during the meditation. And now you have an indicator. If you feel your body tensing up more, see if there are corresponding thoughts to that. If thoughts come up now, see what flavor do they have. Are they patient? Are they kind? What is the tone of voice of the inner monologue? If you have the impression that your inner monologue is not kind enough, than to be patient with that. It's just another act of kindness. Maybe the mind is a little bit more agitated today. Maybe we're a little bit more grumpy today. That's okay. We can always produce this kindness in the very moment right now. That's hopefully what we learn in the meditation. Treat ourselves kindly. We want to learn. Don't want to punish. So we stay just with what is here right now. There's still my voice coming around. There's still this beeping in the background. Slight sound of the cars. If I shut up for a second, you can hear the watch. Can see. Is that enough? Is that enough for the 20-25 minutes we have left? Can that be attractive to our mind? Just remembering that we have this beautiful opportunity that we don't have to do anything. Don't have to do anything. If there's doing, fair enough. But we don't have to. Can you ease into that feeling of no obligations? If the mind is looking for something to cling on to, you can always use your in-breath and out-breath as a center point. Because the body is doing that automatically. When we watch it, we use a little bit of control automatically. That's all right. It's unavoidable. But we just have in the back of our minds that the body is breathing by itself. When we sleep, when we get unconscious, as long as we live, the body is going to breathe. Doesn't need our conscious mind for that. That process, because it has a little bit of movement, it's often easier to watch sensation in the body of the breath going in, the breath going out. Little bit of a kind attitude that can be very pleasant, just the body doing its job. Is just an anchor, nothing that you have to force your mind to. The attention is in your hearing or in some other part of your body, fair enough. If it's wandering around, fair enough. If the mind likes to find something which is a little bit more stable, the breath is always there for you. Nothing better than the other. If you have a little bit of stillness now, but it still feels sort of as there's no pull to it, as it feels a little bit empty maybe, then we can consciously produce this little bit of kind interest. As if we were really interested in what is going on there. Not in the thoughts, but in this perception, in this, even without doing anything, it just goes on and on. It's just perception doesn't stop. It just still wanders around. And if we give that a little bit of kindness and interest, and that sometimes can create this extra pull towards peace, towards where it's getting more beautiful. even if it's not that great, we just treat it as if it was really special. Like we treat a friend who's maybe not in a good mood, but we still have a lot of goodwill for him or her. It's just this underlying goodwill, kindness. going to ring the bell 3 times, and after the 3rd chime, please open your eyes and we end the meditation for tonight. So for the newbies, obviously 30 minutes can be a long time in the beginning. Sometimes when even the ones who meditate for a long time already, if you are in a not so good mood or very restless, and sometimes can be very difficult to meditate. So what I find helpful is, what sounds still attractive to your mind? Huh? If you tell your mind, you don't have to do anything for 3 minutes. Huh? Just watch for 3 minutes without having to do anything. Huh? For my mind, at least, that can be still relatively interesting. Huh? What's going on if I don't do anything? Huh? 5 minutes. Huh? 5 minutes are still alright. And then if you go higher, 10, 20, 30, sort of the mind goes already, it's going to be boring or whatnot. Huh? Oh, that's too long for me today. So whatever, I'm not a big fan of setting this strict meditation hours and times for yourself, because that usually gives this rigor and this unkindness towards it. Huh? And it makes it an exercise again. Why it should be, if this feel to it, in my opinion, is not developed, that you from the beginning you see some value in it without just believing because the monks say so, or the Buddhists say so, or whoever says so. If you have never a feel to it, that is sort of, wow, that feels nice. That sort of is, there is something to this stillness. Huh? I feel my body relaxing. That is actually a pleasant sensation when I have the feeling I don't have to think and I don't have to figure things out. Then it's you're just going to force yourself maybe for a long time, because for some reason you think that's what you have to do, and then you stop. Huh? And you don't have the benefits from that experience of meditation. Huh? It's a way of not achieving, letting go, things falling away. And I mean, the mind is just trained very differently. I think people are restricted now by their internet access. They cannot go to certain points, they cannot go on certain holidays, because there's no internet access. Without internet access, everything is so free, and we have all the access. But in reality, what is happening, we have another strong, tight rope around us actually, that prevents us even from going to some places, from enjoying time without being on this little device the whole time. And how addictive that is for the mind, obviously, this constant input of something. How little happiness we have inside of ourselves. Huh? Isn't that a frightening aspect? Huh? Just this being with ourselves. Oh, boredom. Oh my God. It's boring. Why is it not interesting? Huh? Have a good look at boredom. What is boredom? Huh? Oh, so boring. Still, this child mentality is still so strong. Huh? We're all the grown-ups and we have it all figured out, but in reality, if most people just 10-20 minutes alone with themselves, and they don't know what to do with themselves. Why is that? How is that possible? How can we be so unhappy inside of ourselves. And that is a mind that is constantly trained to seek for satisfaction out there. Something beautiful to hear, something beautiful to see, something beautiful to think about, something beautiful to feel, to smell. So through the five senses and so it's just is getting this beautiful stuff towards us the whole time. And it's an addiction. There's nothing, nobody there who can say, okay, I'm not addicted anymore. Same as a drug addict cannot say, okay, I stop injecting my heroin today. It's the same addiction as any other drug of five senses. So the mind looking outwards for happiness the whole time. And if we don't see the limitation and a little bit of suffering in that, then obviously we run around like mad and try to find beautiful things to do, beautiful things to see, to hear, to touch, to smell, and so on through the five senses. But then sometimes we are forced through sickness, old age, circumstances, poverty, breakups with partners. Oops. And then these circumstances force us to sit still and can't do anything. My eyes are getting weaker, I need new glasses now. Just to see something in half a meter distance. And that's how the senses go. My ears are gonna go weaker, my body is gonna get weaker. And little by little it's gonna fall apart. That's the way of the body. That's how it goes. You have to be aware of that fact. This shouldn't come as a surprise when people get old. It's beautiful to have that awareness. Don't rely completely on this body to give you all your happiness. If you have developed some beauty in your mind, it's not going to be such a big deal when the body falls apart. I've known that. Known that for a long time. That's why the Buddha recommends that we should contemplate death from time to time. Not to scare us witless, however. Make us fearful beings. How is this reminder putting things in perspective? Just this, what is this anger worth if I die in a minute? The anger towards your friend, your spouse, your boss, your I don't know what. In that moment, very clear, he could die in the next moment. See where the anger goes. See how important the anger is if you can really do that. And that is not sort of being cruel to yourself. It is sort of, wow, thank you. Thank you, mind. What a stupidity that anger is. How little in perspective it was. Or the shortcomings of somebody. So this death can become a beautiful friend. So having death sitting on your shoulder from time to time, just wow. What a beautiful reminder to be sharp in the mind. Be kind in the mind, because it's going to create kindness if you do it rightly. All the unwholesome stuff is going to dissipate. What really counts, if you hear people on their deathbed, they don't wish they had more money, they didn't wish they had bigger houses, or their car collection would have been any bigger or what. What they all say is basically that they should have treated their friends and their relatives nicer. They wish they didn't have trouble with their neighbors. All the things of the heart, the things of the mind become very important when death is around. And as a Buddhist, obviously we believe that there is something after death. So if the journey goes on like the Buddhists believe, you take your mind exactly with you the way it was when you die. So obviously it's a pretty cool thing if you die in a way where you say sort of, yeah, now the body is falling apart, I did my best and goodbye. And not crying and lamenting and full of fear and doubts and whatnot. So, but even if it doesn't continue, because I cannot prove that to you, and who knows, then it's still a pretty cool thing. No? If you have a mind that is, that can be happy within itself and is not so dependent on the five senses to get all the pleasure, you have such a big advantage. No? If there's sickness, if you can't consume the usual satisfaction that you get through taste and activity, but you have something to fall back to, huh? And that is why the Buddha calls it a refuge. Huh? A refuge, Buddhism as a refuge. If you have developed that refuge in your mind, you're going to have a huge advantage. Huh? Have that, that advantage of when the internet breaks down, you can stay cool. And when the, when your I don't know what doesn't work anymore in your body, sort of, yeah, that's what the body does, it falls apart. It's nothing that I did wrong. I mean, obviously, if you stress out in your mind, you exhaust your body more. So meditation can help you there, huh? Can help relax the body. Obviously, the more the body is relaxed, the easier the body can recover as well. There are scientific studies that this repairs that the body undergoes. All these little cell mistakes and whatnot that happens in the division, and this whole cell metabolism that goes on in every second, the renewal and the empowerment of every billions of cells in your body. The more stressed out people are, the more effort it is basically on general maintenance, and only when the body relaxes, that the real repair and regeneration processes work in the body. Huh? So meditation can do, wholesome mind states can do something in that direction for your body as well. Huh? It can help, but we should be under no illusion. Huh? The thing is going to fall apart. If it's not through this sickness, it's going to be through the next. Huh? And maybe with 70, maybe with 80, maybe with 90. Hmm? This awareness that it has to go is a thing that is, I find, very important. Hmm? Not to forget that. I worked in an old people's home before I ordained for a year. And I worked with some people who seemed to be completely surprised. Hmm? Completely surprised that they weren't, the body wasn't doing what they wanted it to do anymore. And I just thought, I don't want to end up like that. Huh? They were crying and whatnot, and I never thought I would smell so bad when I'm old. It's just like, yeah, that's what the body does, basically. Huh? You get old and it smells and it's not so easy to wash anymore, actually. And then couldn't move anymore, and they were completely unhappy about that. And then you had other grannies there. And there was, I remember one granny, she was lying in bed, and you said, "Ah, good morning, Anna. Ah, good morning, my dear." Couldn't do anything anymore, but she was the most cheerful old lady you could imagine. So it wasn't the circumstance that she was lying in bed and couldn't move anymore. You saw this condition is created by the mind. If the mind is not ready, you're going to be in trouble. So I just thought to myself, it's an important and worthwhile thing to see what's going on in the mind. How do I create conditions that make the mind more happy in itself? How do I create conditions where I get more dependent on my outside circumstances? So I hope you do the same. And it's not so I shouldn't. Please don't get me wrong. It's not I shouldn't enjoy that anymore. I don't want to be dependent on that. Oh, this cup of tea is too beautiful. I'm getting so attached. Don't worry about that stuff. It's just like all that stuff is going to be there, and the five senses are going to look outwards for happiness, because it's just going to happen. And please don't try to fight that in a weird way, and try to be afraid of that. just this reminder that there's something more. There's something beautiful that can be created in one's own mind as well. And to have that as an alternative to the five senses, the more beautiful this creation in your own mind is, the less the five senses are going to demand anything. If you ever experience a really beautiful mind state, you know, we even call this these moments where you don't wish for anything. In German, it's Wunschlosglücklich. It's basically happiness without condition. It's this moments where everything just seems to be perfect already. The mind is not looking what next? What is next? What can I do next? It's exactly there where it wants to be. And that is only possible if it's happy that it is. That is not a forceful state. This is not a mind that has been told where to go and not to be attached anymore or whatnot. This is a mind that has an idea of what beauty lies within. In this beauty of not needing. And so when this need falls away, this need of looking out, the five senses looking out, hearing out, smelling out. We don't see it as suffering. We're so used to it that we think this is happiness. I'm thirsty, I drink something. Oh, that is an alleviation of suffering. Oh, this is happiness. If it was whiskey or what, I would be even happier. So we make up something. We make up something. If it was just this or that, I would be even happier. But the sensation, just with food, we can make such a big deal out of it. If I had just this food or that food. But it's always the same. It's yum, 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 zuck, it's gone. And sometimes it doesn't even agree that way with you, that you, the foods you like, you suffer from them later on or not in your stomach. But these are the five senses. Hearing something beautiful, or this beautiful concert, or whatnot. And then an hour, 2 hours, and really nice. But try to listen for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, and it's getting torture, actually. It's getting so much suffering. So it's not that they are even reliant, these five senses, that they're going to bring you always the same happiness. It's basically you only need a small dosage of them, and then the other senses want something or whatnot, or you want something different. And the Buddha describes that as suffering. Because the Buddha has obviously found something that is not lurking outwards the whole time to find the happiness, but is a sort of not needing to go outwards anymore, where he found real bliss. When things were falling away, this need of looking outside for happiness was falling away. So you were exactly where you wanted to be. And this, the really good meditation happens in incredible bliss stages. It's not concentration at all, about forcing. It's always painful things falling away. And then the mind realizes, wow, why did I carry that around? Why did I have to think so much? How much of that was nonsense? How much of these worries were so unnecessary? I'm just realizing what burdens we carry around. And to see that, obviously, he encouraged us to develop a wholesome mind. A mind that is without guile. There's no ill will there. There's if you look in your meditation, I described that state shortly. Sometimes you are in a state. It's a little bit calm, and there are not many thoughts, but it still feels sort of the mind is wants to go somewhere. What is next? Sort of it's on the bridge of boredom. And if this this kindness, this interest, this kind interest in the process is established enough, and your faith in your own guilelessness and your own goodness is established enough, if you keep your precepts for long enough, if you keep your mind wholesome for long enough, then there is enough power there. This inner smile just becomes big enough. This interest, this kind interest becomes big enough, and it just, boom, it takes over. It takes over by itself, and because it's so beautiful, just all the doubts fall away in your mind as well. Because it is, in a way, it's a scary, very scary process. Letting go is what we fear the most. The fear of the unknown, that is the biggest fear we have. We don't know what that is. It's very powerful. All this concepts we have of ourselves can just dissolve in that. All what we thought we were thoughts, we were our feelings. I was my perceptions, I was this sort of liking and disliking, and all these concepts, if that falls away at a certain point. The people who describe these experiences, they say they always felt shaken. It's a shaken experience afterwards, because these preconceptions of what life is, they fall away. But because I hope you're practicing meditation from the very beginning, that you put your effort in your attitude of your mind. What's your inner monologue? Are you treating yourself kindly? Or are you a nasty school teacher in your mind the whole time?
You shouldn't, but you do it again. How often do I have to tell you?
And a lot of people treat themselves like that. And sometimes I can see my own mind going in that direction, but usually I practice for long enough that I can cut that off early enough now. Because it's not that you see that one time and then it's gone. You see it, the mind realizes it, it's gone for the moment, but it's a tendency. These tendencies are very strong. They're strong strings, and it's through many, 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 many souls they are established. And you don't just cut them off by realizing once all this is unwholesome. This mindfulness, this attention of what is going on in my mind, has to be there all the time. So you see, this is an unwholesome thought, this is a wholesome thought. This thought is complete nonsense. There's no truth to this thought. If you pay attention to your mind and your body, you can see it. But if we are full of anger, we can't see it. We don't have that distance. If I'm angry, I'm in the anger. There's no distance that can say, oh, this is just a stupid process, but you're angry. That is you. That feels like you. If it's lust, if it's some strong desire for anything, they are very powerful. They pull, and then the mind that can see clearly is obscured, cannot see clearly. And this is just what's happening. It's just the way it is. But then a few minutes later, a few hours later, we can sit back and watch it again. What happened there? If it's anger, often best to get out of it as quick as you can. Distract yourself with something else. And then, when you're calm, make your decisions. Think about it clearly. What happened in that situation? Was it all the fault of the other person? Or was it all your fault? It's bullshit. It never is. It's just causes and conditions come together. It's just we rub on each other because your desires clash with my desires. I want the last piece of pizza! Why did he take my last piece of pizza? Idiot, this greedy, greedy bastard. He is so greedy, he cannot control his desires. He always takes the pizza. He doesn't think of anybody else. And he did. How stupid is that, You probably don't have that because you buy whatever you want. But if I give you a few weeks in the monastery, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But then comes Alzheimer.
Yes, that's right. But then you're stuck with just your tendencies, huh?
Yes.
Often people can get very angry when they get Alzheimer's. Huh? So that cannot, because we really identify ourselves with our memory, with our intellect. And when that goes, it's this whoa. And other people try to control us again, like we were little children, and we can't let go. So a lot of anger with Alzheimer's patients, definitely. Yeah, when that stuff goes, usually that's what happens. Anger comes up. It's nothing. Most Westerners don't have very huge refuge developed in their mind. Some people have just natural wisdom or whatever it is. Huh? They just lived a good life. And just by with their characters and their circumstances, they were lucky. Huh? Just very contented people in their old age. They didn't need to be Buddhists for that. Saw some really lovely grannies, and I saw some really nasty grannies, actually. They were all grannies, there were no granddads. So it's not because I'm a sexist, so I was on a granny station, actually. granddad can be the same, obviously. No? So, but to get a little bit more insight of why that happens, and maybe be a little bit more in a position to do something about it, I hope meditation can help you. Getting this distance, getting a feeling for wholesome, unwholesome thought processes in your mind. You don't have to believe anybody anymore when they tell you this is good for you, that is good for you. Sometimes thoughts can be so unwholesome already. They seem to be so right, but you feel and you see it doesn't matter if they are right. They aren't right. They feel really, really bad. And then if the clearer the mind sees us, the easier the mind lets go. And then they come again. But every time they come again, actually, they get weakened a little bit. And sometimes in the beginning, it's hard to see that. That they get weakened, because it takes some time. But the power loosens up. And the moments where you catch yourself, where you can step back and see what's going on, they become quicker. The longer your practice works. Okay, so any questions? Yes, please.
John, for the newbies, can you explain the hindrances, just, I guess, briefly?
Okay. Well, obviously, we in Buddhism, we always hear about, if you heal, then you hear about five hindrances. But in 5 minutes, I cannot go through five hindrances. But the most important is basically, you can base on that what I told you. The mind is looking for happiness and trying to avoid unhappiness. So there you have two of the major hindrances, wanting and not wanting. They are always the ones in your meditation, which are usually the ones you can see immediately. You sit, unpleasant feeling in the body, not wanting, or something looks a little bit nice somewhere, and the mind is immediately trying to go there and grasp, wanting. So they are the immediate reactions of the mind. Something looks pleasant. The mind grabs something that's unpleasant, the mind tries to push it away. Wanting, not wanting. Then, obviously, a major one in Western society, maybe I should bring up tonight, is doubt as well. Doubt can come up in the meditation. Am I practicing right? Am I doing the right thing? I'm not getting anywhere. It's this whole Buddhist stuff. Is that not just another nonsense, actually? Christianity is so far better. I believe in Jesus, and then everything will be alright again, actually. Just the Buddha's teaching is just confusing me. I'm not good enough. Other people are not good enough. The world is coming to an end. Blah, 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 blah. All sorts of doubts about yourself, about others, about your practice, about everything. And you don't have the power in that moment to see. It's just like, rather that it's just continued babble in the mind, basically. And then hopefully you bring up the mindfulness and ask yourself, even if that is all true, what is it good for? What is it good for? Is it helping me or other people? Is it making me more happy or other people? That is a good question for a lot of doubt questions. It's just like any teaching that claims I'm the one and just follow me and you're going to be happy is just nonsense anyway. Yeah? It's not going to help. If you don't can look for yourself and feel something that pulls you, and on a very elementary human level where this doubt stops, because kindness eradicates this doubt. It's, as a, at least in my experiences, and there are moments where all this certainty falls away, and I think people who died, like I said, have the same experience. Where everything that seemed important in their life before just falls away. All the materialism and all the power they had, whatever. It just crumbles and becomes completely meaningless, and so your identity that was built around it crumbles as well. And the only true refuge I find in my own mind is kindness. It is this absolute belief that I don't wish anybody anything bad for a very long time. That is my refuge against doubt. This certainty that I have, even I get still angry, I can be nasty still and impatient and whatnot. But somewhat. That's just, I don't claim to be anywhere where I'm not. I'm not awakened. I have seen I'm not there where I would like to be. But I have developed something in my mind where I trust this sort of, I don't wish anybody anything bad for a long time. Even when it pissed me off.
When I took the last place of
the I was exaggerating a little bit, but I remember that thought process actually a few years ago. Maybe not quite extreme like that. But it's how the mind works. Huh? Somebody gets interferes with our in our realm of wanting and not wanting, and that becomes unpleasant. And that's just what happens to us humans. No? Because we all have different wants and not wants. No? And in your partnerships, it's the worst. Because your men and women, they don't fit together at all. So you're constantly in this process of compromising. I just hope you have the kindness to see that your partner probably tries to compromise as well the whole time. You know, and sometimes we can overlook that. So, but this is the hardest. Huh? Good long marriage doesn't happen that often anymore. 50% of marriages break, I think. No, at least in America. Not quite sure Australia. So only half of them make it. I don't know if when the spouses die, if they have the statistics. So maybe it's even far more, actually, if the other person has died already and you're lucky enough that you're in the long marriage. Even though it's not quite true. So there are the three major hindrances basically I want to get into. That's what you can work with in your meditation. See wanting, not wanting, see doubts coming up. And with all three of them, I hope you try to treat this as patient and kind as you can. See it as causes and conditions coming up in the mind. Don't take it personal. The more patience, the more insight you have with that, the steadier you chip away on that stuff. And the more of the stuff that is unwholesome in your mind falls away, the happier your mind is going to get. And if you don't have that experience, then Buddhism is completely worthless to you. Because it's not a teaching that you believe long enough and then something happens. If you don't see a process happening in your mind where you see you're on the right path, then I don't call it Buddhism. And it's just another belief. It's not a teaching of experience and learning. It's just another belief in something. So I hope you use your meditation and your wisdom to get your mind in a really nice direction. And then when you're old and on your deathbed,
remember
that you can go with a smile. No worries anymore. Just, oh, now the body is falling away. I know that for a long time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.